Thanks a lot, Mike, for coming out here.
I appreciate having me, man. It's a pleasure.
You drove in or you took the train?
Yeah, I took the train. I like taking the train so I can listen to audiobooks and read. I don't like driving.
Word. See, every time I get the updates on my phone that says, like, how much screen time I have,
yeah,
I'm always disappointed. It's like you're using your phone, like, 6 hours, 7 hours a day. And I realize it's because, I'm on the train for most of my day, and I'm just playing games on my phone or listening to music or listening to podcasts or something like that.
Yeah.
I know you said you always are reading books or listening to audiobooks.
Yeah, but audiobooks, podcasts, or reading?
I do podcasts because I can't listen to just one person talk for that long. It needs to be a conversation.
Yeah.
It needs to be a dialogue. Thanks again, though, for coming out. Why don't you tell everybody who you are and what's your preferred combat sport of choices?
Awesome. So my name is Mike Stedman. I am the founder of Ironbound Boxing. We're a social enterprise based in Newark, New Jersey. Our sole purpose is basically spread our love, appreciation for the sport of boxing, and we do it in a couple ways. One, we run a free boxing program in Newark at the Ironbound Boxing Academy, which is our free gym for youth and young adults in the city. And another aspect of that, we teach boxing to companies in the New York City metro area as a form of employee wellness. So we're creating our own ecosystem that allows us to teach boxing, make money doing it, and support kids in low-income communities.
Cool. So how did you get started in boxing? Because you said you started boxing in the military, right?
Right. Yeah, I was introduced to boxing at the United States Naval Academy. So when you go to Annapolis, one of the things they make us do is pick a sport. And my freshman year, I walked into a boxing gym, and the first day the coach made us spar, and it was a unique feeling. I didn't know how to describe it, right? Like, you kind of think you know how to fight, but then when somebody says, all right, put gloves on, ready, go, it's like, what do I do with my hands, right? But the feeling I got from that experience, I was like, wait a minute, people own this? Like, they live in this world? Like, boxing to them is like playing pickup basketball, and I wanted to learn that, and so that took me down a pathway through boxing in college where I ended up being a 3-time national boxing champion at a light heavyweight, 2-time most valuable boxer, and was a captain of my boxing team as well.
Nice. So you had never...
Never boxed before in my life.
Never taken, like, a karate class when you were, like, 9 years old and nothing.
I mean,
like,
I took a karate, but, like, I don't really remember it. But yeah, I remember I went to something, but, it was my first experience stepping into the squared circle.
Yeah, it's the same thing for me. I remember taking a karate class, like, very vaguely when I was much younger at, like, the local Y.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I can remember from it, like, distinctly is the instructor was female, and there was a time where for the test to get, like, our stripe on our belt, we had to kind of do, like, a sparring with her. And she's like, you have to try to hit me. And my mom was on the side, and I remember her saying, like, don't hit women, don't hit girls. And I'm like, how do I do this? Like, right. There's something wrong here. I don't know what to do. So I just kind of froze there, and everyone's laughing and looking at me, and they're like, go, try, do it. And I'm like, no. So it just ended with me just standing there in the middle of the room. So, yeah, karate doesn't really count. But so how long were you boxing how long were you in the Naval Academy for?
Four years. So to be honest, I didn't have the grades to go in right away, so they sent me to a prep school.
Oh,
so I spent a year in Newport, Rhode Island. I pretty much had to prove I could handle the academic rigors of Annapolis. And then after that, I spent 4 years at the academy. So it was a 5-year process total, 4 years at Annapolis, 1 year at the prep school.
Well, what was the thing that was blocking you to go directly in? Was it grades or was it an attitude thing?
No, it was grades. I mean, I had like a 2.4 GPA. I graduated high school with like a 2.44 GPA, nothing to brag about. And then I had a low SAT score. But like, I was just really determined to go to Annapolis. Like, it was my dream. And so I conveyed that in everything I did in terms of essays and everything else. I was like, if you just give me a chance, I will prove this thing that I can. I'm Naval Academy caliber.
What was the driving force in that? What made you choose Navy?
For me, I think it was just I wanted to go to the military and I wanted to be an officer. And then in my process of doing research, I realized that the service academies, West Point, Naval Academy, Air Force Academy, these were like the premier places. Like, these were like the best ones. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, me being young, it's crazy before you become an adult and people try to tell you what you can and can't do. But when I was younger, I was like, that's where I want to go. I want to go to where the best are going. And once I start finding out about Annapolis and the legacy and the culture and the people that came out of there, I was like, that's the place for me. So I wanted to go.
Did you see the movie, or were you just like, nah?
I was already in after I saw the movie. I was already at the prep school. But I don't know. It was just a very audacious goal.
Yeah.
It was crazy. You know?
I mean, apparently not, because you did it.
I know. And it's funny because I look back on that now. I look back at my entrepreneurial journey and the ambitions I have for Ironbound Boxing as a brand. And, you know, it's so daunting when you think about, like, all the stuff you have to do. But then I go back and, like, okay, I want to go to the Naval Academy, and I had a 2.4 GPA. That was almost, like, impossible, because it was, like, the Naval Academy is just – I mean, the caliber of kids they got there now, it's, like, unless you have, like, a 4.0 and are, like, a rocket scientist or something, like, I don't know how I would have been able to get in to with the kids they have now. But I did it. And then the same thing, I was like, oh, I want to be a national champ. And that seemed so impossible at the time, mm-hmm. especially when I had never boxed before. So as I kind of look back at those experiences and I kind of equate it to entrepreneurship, I think it's the same thing.
So when you got in, were there other people that were there that had already boxed that were part of the team?
Yeah, there was one guy, named Tim Green, who's actually a good friend of mine. I was actually had a chance to go to his wedding. And but yeah, I mean, he was a beast that summer. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, all of us were just in awe at his ability to just dominate other human beings in the ring.
Was it immediately boxing? You were like, this is the thing? Or were you trying to, like, feel out other sports? Did you not even get that far?
No, at first I wanted to do crew, right? So I played high school basketball, but I didn't get – I mean, I wasn't, like, a starter or anything. Like, I wasn't getting in the game unless we were up by, like, 30 points and there was less than, like, 2 minutes left.
Got it.
But I loved the feeling of being on the team and the team atmosphere. So when I looked at what sports you could walk on at Annapolis, it's a D1 school, so you still got to, you know, mm-hmm. got to be talented. They had walk-ons for crew. So I was like, oh, I'll go do crew. And this was like pre-CrossFit, the boom and all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. So get to Annapolis, and then, you know, they make us pick a sport. And so at first I went to crew, and I used to have to run like 2.5 miles just to get to the crew house and then just run on a bunch of ergs.
Early, right? In the morning too, early, right?
It was like I thought, you know, I was going out on a boat. I was doing all this rowing. But then you realize that, like, hey, you spend a lot of time on these machines just pulling until you puke. And I was like, you know what, this is lame, so I don't want to really do this.
So instead you did the same thing except with just boxing, right?
Yeah, with
waking
boxing
up early and then running and then
right.
Damn, that's crazy. So how long were you in the academy for, you said?
4 years.
4 years, right. Yeah. And then afterwards, did you continue to box at all, or
I did done? So I got commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. The Marine Corps doesn't have a service academy. We all go through the Naval Academy because mm-hmm. the Marine Corps technically falls under the Department of the Navy, and so 25% or more of the graduating class will go Marine Corps. So I graduated, went Marine Corps, became an infantry officer, and then ended up deploying to Afghanistan in 2012, Japan and the Philippines in 2014. And during that time, I boxed. I mean, I was always coaching. I started a brand called Fight Mojo. It was like my pre-Ironbound boxing brand. And was boxing and teaching. Had a short stint with the Marine Corps boxing team. Mm-hmm. So boxing was always there. Like, I coached at a local gym and everything. But one of the frustrations I had in military was the military life is so uncertain, you know. And to develop a good boxing program or to develop your athletes, you kind of need to be in one place for a long amount of time. You know, you can't really build a program in like 2-3 years. It takes longer than that.
Yeah.
You can get started, but, you know, this idea of having a home base. And in the military culture, people are always coming and going. Everyone's moving around. So you might have somebody you're working with, but then they're leaving like a year later. And so you can't really develop them. And so that was always frustrating to me. And so that was one of the things that also kind of wanted me to get out too, because I wanted to do boxing and I needed a place where I could set up a home base.
So is that where the genesis of Ironbound began?
Actually, no. What is Ironbound now, I think, began when I was at the Naval Academy. So I tell people, you know, you don't win 3 national championships boxing a bunch of midshipmen. You know, I learned boxing in inner city gyms in Baltimore, D.C., Virginia.
Oh, so even then you were hopping around. You weren't just staying
around
in one gym.
Yeah, I was sparring. I sparred in Brooklyn, spent a trip out here for a week, mm-hmm. did a training camp in Brooklyn, sparred at
Gleason's? Or
We trained at Gleason's. We trained at Starrett City. Mm-hmm. We trained at Freeport Powell.
Yeah.
It was all these gyms in New York, and that whole experience was like, yo, this is amazing. But one of the things I noticed was a lot of the young men and women I trained alongside in these inner city gyms had a lot of different life aspirations than my teammates and I from Annapolis. So at the end of the day, we're boxing, but we're going to graduate. We're going to have our degrees and become officers in the military, then probably get out and start our own businesses or become professionals and lawyers. But a lot of the kids in these gyms, it was just like their only aspirations were to go pro. They felt like their only option was either be in the streets or be in the gym, you know, go pro or go back to the streets. And I always thought that was a broken system. Love boxing. Professional boxing is entertaining, but it's not the thing that, like, I get the most out of boxing. Mm-hmm. And I think I wanted to create a brand that shared that with other kids as well. Like, there's so much, there's so much more we could be doing with boxing in terms of the demographic of youth and young adults we're able to reach with it, but it just doesn't get done for whatever reason because of the boxing culture, the amateur culture. And so I wanted to change that. And so that was the genesis of Ironbound Boxing in the early days. Just this idea of how can I bring more to low-income communities through boxing.
When you were going into these other gyms, were the people that were already there, were they looking at you like the prep kids? Because you said that you and the crew that you had, you know, you guys had goals beyond boxing. You guys had a life beyond that. So were they looking at you different?
I mean, they were just looking at us different because we're from the Naval Academy. Here we are in these inner city gyms in like a basement in D.C. in Brooklyn. And to be honest, half the kids didn't really know what the Naval Academy was. They just assumed we were just the Navy. You know, that's what we represented.
So like one and the same.
Yeah, but I always took. But for us, like those of us on the team, whatever, it was a whole different world for us. We're like, these are, you know, I mean, shoot. I mean, I had a really diverse team, but like half of them, I mean, they never spent time in the inner city, in the hood. You know,
that was my next question. What were their opinions of?
Yeah, we took it as a thing of pride, you know, like we could go into these locations, you know, and hold our own, you know, inside these really inner city, gritty, tough gyms, you know, gain the respect of those we're sparring against. And then we could go back to the academy and like this was a shared experience that only we had, because most midshipmen will never do that. You know, a lot of people think they're tough, but it's one thing to go into some basement in Brooklyn, you know, and go toe to toe with someone.
Going to enemy territory.
Yeah,
so to
going
speak.
To enemy territory. And we did that over and over again. It just became this sense of pride. You know, we were kind of looked at as like these college boys, you know, coming in, doing the sparring, whatever. But it really had an effect on me.
Especially with boxing, just because most boxing gyms, it's not like in a lot of other combat sports and martial arts, there's at least some wiggle room where it's like, oh, I'm the new guy, I train at this place, but I'm coming in to train with you guys. And they'll be nice for a little bit. With most boxing gyms, you come into someone else's home, they're trying to beat the shit out of you.
Right, and so that's the thing about it, is you got to be able to hold your own. So that was one of the things I always pride myself. Like, even, you know, as a boxer, like, I never bragged or nothing. People, you know, even till this day, I go into gyms and people are like, oh, when I used to spar, they'd be like, you ever boxed before? And I'm like, yeah, I boxed before. And they're like, are you any good? And I used to say, like, oh, I could hold my own, you know. Even in the military, that was a thing, too, because you're an officer, right? Officers don't box, you know. They're like, dude, this guy's an officer, this is a lieutenant. He can't. But then, you know, when I went to Marine Corps, I'll give you an example. Marine Corps boxing team, right? They used to have a team. And when I got to my unit down in Lejeune, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, first thing I did was I called the team and was like, hey, when are y'all having sparring? And they were like, oh, we're having sparring this Saturday. So I was like, oh, can I come? They're like, yeah, sure. So I show up, and then the coach was like, hey, man, he asked me that question. He's like, so you ever boxed before? I was like, yeah, I used to box in college. You any good? Yeah, I can hold my own. He's like, all right. Because he's looking at me like, he's like, you're an officer, man. So he puts me in there.
He thought you were going to get eaten up.
Yeah, he puts me in there. First round, I bust this dude's nose, man. He starts bleeding. Shit. Right? And then now I'm starting to get the attention of the other guys in the gym. They're like, oh, who's this guy, you know? And afterwards, you know, the coach pulled me aside. He's like, hey, man, what are you doing? He's like, you should come, you know, we'll get you orders over here to the Marine Corps boxing team. And I was like, nah, as much as I love boxing, I went through hell to be an infantry officer in the Marine Corps. It's a very, very hard job and rigorous schooling. And I did that because I wanted to lead Marines in combat in Afghanistan. And so I was like, yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to come over here. But my first priority is I want to lead a platoon in Afghanistan. And so I turned them down initially.
Wow. So did you ever have any aspirations of going pro, or was it just strictly like amateur?
No, never. I mean, my whole thing was about being an officer in the military. I just want to be an infantry officer. I want to be a platoon commander. But people have to realize for the military, at least for me, it was very similar to how I felt about the first time I stepped in a boxing ring. So when you're a young, you know, quite frank, black kid in Texas with dreams and ambitions.
Where out in Texas? Sorry.
College Station.
Okay.
Single parent home, never met my dad, and I just wanted more, you know? And then you kind of look at these posters of these military guys, especially the Navy SEALs and the Marines, and they just look so strong and so tough, and something that, like, I just didn't feel like I had. I felt like I had it, but I didn't really have it like that, You get what I'm saying? And so I was like, I don't know what those guys want, but I want it. And so that's what kind of led me down the path to the military. And then in order to kind of finish that out, I had to do that military experience. You know, I had to do boots on the ground and go to combat and do all that stuff. At least I thought, in order to kind of feel that way. Now, looking back on it, I tell myself, like, man, if I would have known what I know now, you don't really have to do anything. I won't say you don't have to do anything to get that, but a lot of those values, that confidence, that can be instilled in you at an early age by a coach or a family member, a parent. But unfortunately, like, for people of color, we just don't have that same level of confidence unless you're like an athlete or something. And so now my kind of mission is to bridge that gap with the kids I'm serving through Ironbound. You know, I want them to feel like, I want them to feel like that, whether they go to an elite business school, whether they go join the military or not. Like, I want them to learn the traits of how to carry themselves, how to think, how to act, the mindset associated with that kind of mentality, and just build it in an organic way.
When did that click for you that, like, oh, I now am that person that I saw in the poster, I saw in the Navy commercials or whatever? When were you like, oh, I've already gotten to that point?
I think when people would describe, people started to describe me. You know, I would just kind of hear how they would talk about me, and I'm just like, all right. You know, not on some arrogant stuff, but then you kind of look, anytime like I go through some adversity, at the end of the day, I got to look back at my traction, right? Like, what have I done? You know, like, let me fill out this column, you know, 3-time national champ, Naval Academy graduate, 2-time most valuable boxer, Marine infantry officer, entrepreneur, you know what I mean? Like, I've racked up some wins along the way.
You got the accolades.
I've got the accolades. And so, you know, this whole concept of like self-awareness and why meditation and stuff is so important is because it allows you to kind of like zoom out and see how you're showing up to the world and how other people perceive you. And so once I realized that, it was like, okay, like, this is something that I've kind of got. But I don't necessarily think I had to do it the way I did in order to get it. And I think that's the misconception with people of color in this country, is that we think we have to, like, you know, be, it's let me try to describe this. I feel like it's a false narrative, and we're teaching the wrong narrative to young men and women of color about what it takes to be successful and what it takes to be great. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I have a picture on my Instagram of Everlast just posted this picture of some sparring that took place at Ironbound Boxing Academy, literally on Thursday night. And the kid in the video is in the picture. He's got his arm around his little cousin. He's got dreads in the video and in the picture, and he's got boxing gloves hanging around his neck, right? And I look at that picture, and I'm like, damn, bro, that is a bad. Can I cuss? Can I swear?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that's a badass picture. But you know how jacked up we're going to be, man? When I was coming up, we would look at that kid and be like, hey, man, if you want to be great, you're going to have to cut dreads.
The hair. Yeah, yeah.
You know? Remember the stuff they used to tell us about, like, your last name? Like, we grew up in that. Like, don't name your kids Kwame or a Murray or whatever because you want them to get the job. And then you, like, buy into that narrative, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And it's this perpetual narrative keeps getting told over them. But now I kind of look back at them, I'm like, yo, man, that's fucked up.
Yeah, you know? It's code switching, not just with what you say, but for your whole entire life.
Right. And my thing is, as I look at my frustration now is as I look at people who've ascended to positions of power from the communities of color, and it's like they keep perpetuating those same stereotypes and those same standards, you know, and it doesn't have to be. Yeah. And so I think when I look at like Ironbound Boxing and any ventures I'm associated with, you know, Dope Coffee too, it's like I want to create a culture of inclusivity. From the ground up, though, like it's like in everything that we do, where like I can show up, a kid or an employee can show up with dreads and feel at home. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. He can show up in his true skin and not have to pretend to be something he's not. And I think that's what we have to, that's like over and over again. It's like crazy. And you buy into that narrative. Then you become an entrepreneur, and then you just start like grinding and outperforming people. And then you realize, like, man, it has nothing to do with that. It's like, can you add value?
Yeah,
you know, as bottom line, like in a company, can you add value in a company as an employee? Can you perform, right? And I feel like performance trumps a lot of that stuff. But unfortunately, like, again, we keep the same negative stereotypes.
Yeah, I think that tributes to I was just talking about this the other day, the imposter syndrome. You know, everybody gets it. I think people of color get it more just because they're trying to we're trying to figure out like how to exist in this white dominated world and pretend to be one of them.
I think it plays into mental health too. Like, so many people that struggle mental health wise, and I feel like it's because you're living a lie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you want people to perceive you as one thing, and then something happens, a traumatic event, you lose your job, and now all of a sudden your world's blown up, right? People have to see you for who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And some people aren't necessarily ready to kind of like deal with that. And so that causes a lot of like mental health issues, the whole imposter syndrome thing. And I mean, I'm going to say I don't struggle from it, but as I ascend in terms of like an entrepreneur and I get to see more and more how the sausage is made, you know, in the back, it's not as much of like imposter syndrome as much as like, this is how it's really done, you know?
Yeah.
Like this feeling of like, you know, people think stuff is more than it really is. I mean, if people only knew, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, even starting a business, building Ironbound Boxing, some of the brands I've been associated with and I've been able to work with, right? Like, you think it's the Wizard of Oz, right? And you get behind the curtain, it's like one guy pulling a bunch of strings. And
yeah.
You're like, this is entrepreneurship. This is the world in general, you know?
Yeah, I remember when I visited you at Ironbound, and a lot of the things you were telling me, you're like, oh, it's kind of fake it till you make it. You know, I don't want to give out all the ingredients that goes into the sausage, but you were telling me all these little things that are like, oh, it doesn't have to be the bright and shiny thing. It doesn't have to be the new, clean, sleek, modern product that you think it is.
Yeah.
You just do what you can to make it as presentable as possible and just go from there. Work with what you have.
Right. And it's not fake it till you make it. It's act as if.
Yeah,
right. Act
exactly.
As if you're like everything is moving like you want it to move. You know that like, you know, you have this crazy business idea and you've got a bunch of investors and you've got a bunch of clients. So like act as if. Start carrying your business that way now, so that way when it does happen, you're not having to jump through hoops,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you're already like ready to go. But I just want to make sure, you know, I circle back to what we initially talked about. So when did I realize like I was that guy? Just again, people describing me, you know, people describing me to other people, or you know, when they like you do an interview and it's like, send me your bio, and you send the bio and all that kind of stuff. So not necessarily like buying into your own whatever, but just seeing that like, hey, you do really bring some value. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's the hardest time. I think for us of people of color too, it's like we high performing people of color with ambitious goals. A lot of times we struggle patting ourselves on the back because we're comparing our standard to other people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I just put a new boxing ring in my gym, thanks to Everlast.
I saw. Congratulations.
Week. Yeah, and so, like, no matter what goes on in, like, business or whatever, no matter how bad my week goes in terms of, you know, my venture overall, dude, my kids think we're superheroes, you know? They just
all
know,
the dopest shit to them.
Yeah, have you seen a brand-new boxing ring and boxing gyms in the hood? You know what I mean? Have you seen the rings people are working with?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we put a brand-new ring in, and all my kids got dope gear. You know, they're showing up on the Everlast social media. You know, they see me in the media. So as far as they're concerned, self-awareness-wise, I'm Mike Stedman. You know what I'm saying?
Like, y'all made it. Yeah.
He's doing it. And I've probably done more in their eyes than they've seen people do coming out of that community to support them. And so when you realize that, it's like, you know, sometimes I got to take a step back and be like, you know what, man? I might not be on Forbes and we're not making a lot of money right now and I'm not able to impact as many kids as I would like, but we're doing something.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be something here.
That's what I was going to ask you. It's like, it's easy to get caught up in what's the next step or what we should be doing.
Right.
And seeing the kids and how they react to what's already happening, that must be very grounding for you.
Yeah, no, it keeps me grounded. I mean, it's the why. Like, we just had this conversation about, you know, I was like, oh, I want to do a podcast or have all this equipment. But, like, does it support my goal, right? Mm. Is this growing the number of kids I'm able to impact, you know? And so, you know, getting back, it keeps me grounded because that's my mission, right? Like, I want to impact kids through boxing. And so everything I do business-wise is built and fueled around that.
So when did you start taking the first steps to actually start Ironbound? Because I know you said first it was in a gym, right? A church gym or a school gym?
No. So I got a job working at a private school in Newark called St. Benedict's Prep. And my goal there was to basically recreate the Naval Academy boxing program at a private school in Newark. Now, St. Benedict's is not your typical private school. It caters to young men of color, all boys, 90% black and Latino. 90% of them can't afford to be there. So they have to fundraise and they get scholarships via financial aid and whatnot. And so I moved there and was working as the residence hall director. So I ran a giant house with 70 teenage boys. And the concept too was working in the evening would allow me to coach boxing during the day a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, have my bases covered. Cause it's like, oh, if I want to coach amateur boxing, realistically, like, how are you going to make money doing it?
Yeah.
And but then while I was training kids at St. Benedict's, I was like, you know what? I kind of want to impact the broader Newark community, not just the kids at St. Benedict's. And so I was always looking for opportunities to work with more kids in the whole community. And then I ended up approaching the city of Newark about opening a gym inside a rec center. If they had a space somewhere, could we turn it into a boxing gym? Ended up getting a thumbs up by the city of Newark and a guy named Obalaj Baraka, the mayor's brother. And then we got started. And the gym is located in the Ironbound neighborhood of Newark, hence the term Ironbound Boxing. Also partnered with a guy named Gary Bloor, who had a nonprofit he was looking at starting up called Ironbound USA. Taught about, built around like teaching kids personal branding, a little bit of entrepreneurship stuff, but really big on like art and graffiti. And so I reached out to him. We did a collab on the gym, came in there, threw up some dope graffiti, and we launched the Ironbound Boxing Academy.
Yeah, because the gym looks dope.
Like, yeah, it's a dope gym. I mean, that, I never walk in the gym and I'm like, damn, this. It always brightens my day when I walk in the gym. Like, I walk in the gym, I'm just like, this is an impressive. Like, this is a gym. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because I've been to plenty of gyms, both, you know, newer gyms, old gyms. Like, there's a lot of legacy gyms that you're like, damn, this place is fucking falling apart.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, it smells like old, like mildew and musty, like old posters that are like curling up at the edges, yellowed and everything. The ring, like you said, old ass rings are falling apart and everything. But I mean, even though you're young, you could have ended up the same way. Just like, oh, this is the space and it's what we have now. It's very unfurnished and everything. I think it looks amazing.
Yeah, I think the standard for me was just raised just being at the Naval Academy because we just had an amazing gym. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And like now I'm at a point in my life where like, not for nothing, like we just like black people and people of color deserve nice things.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Just because there's a boxing program in the hood doesn't mean a kid doesn't deserve some sick uniform, a nice ring, yeah. You know, some bags, but like that becomes the standard. Like, so if I had come up in the traditional amateur boxing circuit, that would have been my standard for what I thought a boxing program was, right?
Yeah.
Just some dungy program in the hood, leaky ceiling, you know, which is fine. And I like those gyms too, but I just want our kids to have something different.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
So everything about Ironbound Boxing is just different. How we brand it, how we speak about it, the way the gym looks, the strategic partnerships we're building out. You know, it's just different.
And I remember I was with you for a private boxing session downtown.
Right.
And guy from
was it Steady Buckets?
Steady Buckets, yeah. Guy from Steady. What's his name again?
Coach Mackey.
Yeah, yeah. He was talking to me for a while, and one of the things he said was, you know, nonprofits with kids and like sports or like performing arts or anything, the problem with a lot of them is since it's a nonprofit, they usually suck.
Yeah.
And usually if it's paid, that's when it's good. He's like, why can't we get something that is both for the community and also of like high quality?
Right.
And I think that's what you guys provide. Steady Buckets as well. But you guys really found a way to make something that not only is for the community, but also is like very high quality.
Right.
And I remember you were talking about bringing some of your kids to fight. I think it was like in D.C. or Virginia somewhere.
Yeah.
And other people were like, we don't know these guys, but then once you guys fought, they're like, oh, Ironbound actually knows how to fight. They have good fighters. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not from Newark, and Newark is a rough city, so it's like, unless you're born and raised in Newark, you can't be from Newark. And so that's why I get a lot of pushback as a young guy coming in with a boxing program. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of coaches think I'm trying to be the best boxing coach. Maybe I was back in the day. you know, like, when you're a young coach, you have ambitions, right? Like, you want to be, I don't know, Olympic coach or whatever, but just building my brand. Like, I don't really care about being the best boxing coach. I want to build the best amateur boxing programs. You know, mm-hmm. I want to build the best brand. So, like, my accolades, because I think a lot of times it'll be like that. Oh, okay, you have a gym, you got this. We'll be like, what have you done? Like, have you taken kids to nationals? Have you done all this kind of stuff? And so that becomes their measure of success, right? But not looking at, like, all the other accolades. Like I said, mm-hmm. the sheet. So, I kind of took those accolades and went and ran with what we did, and we got a gym going, and we got a national partnership with Everlast, which is the largest distributor of boxing equipment globally.
How did that come about?
It just organically, man, you know, sitting out there talking about the brand. You know, I've done a lot of work in the veteran entrepreneur space with organizations like Bunker Labs, which is a national nonprofit that caters to veteran entrepreneurs. I worked as a part-time consultant with WeWork, helping them mm-hmm. with their veterans and residents initiatives.
We won't talk about WeWork.
Yeah, we won't talk about WeWork. But
that's not your fault.
But yeah, and every time I would do a media piece for Bunker Labs or WeWork, the question would naturally come up from the interviewer, oh, tell us about your venture. And I'm like, well, yeah, I have a boxing gym in Newark, Ironbound Box. They're like, wait, what? And because
so you weren't bringing it up, you were just kind of keeping that in the back pocket, and then just
not even in the back pocket, but it's part of my story, right? Yeah. So like I'm representing these organizations that are catering to veteran entrepreneurs, right? I was volunteering, and then the other I had a part time gig, but then they would ask us, tell us about your entrepreneurial journey, and so I think a lot of stuff with Ironbound Boxing just spoke to a lot of people, and that's the thing about the brand, right? Is like when you think about the beauty of an inner city gym, and especially the way we're doing it, where we're like, I live in Newark, so it's not like I'm like coming in on weekends or whatever. Like I live there, like that's my city. Mm-hmm. So I get to have like real stories. You get what I'm saying? Like I'm pretty intimate with like all of our kids, you know, so I can speak to some of the challenges they face. I can speak to the reality of Newark, and that's like branding and story that you don't make up. You get mm-hmm. what I'm saying? A lot of people, like, you come into Ironbound, you don't have to, like, pose for a photo. You mm-hmm. just take the photos, right? And then people see the photos, they're like, oh, man, how'd you get that photo? That's a great shot. So much emotion from the kid. I'm like, dude, you know, it's real. You know what I'm saying? Like, lot of people have to set up crazy photo shoots and this and that. You just come to the gym when it's packed with kids and just start clicking away, and the stories tell themselves. So the brand is really a vehicle to tell those stories, you know? To elevate it. So like even the Everlast thing, you know, I did an interview for Barker Labs, ended up running on Fox News, which is local news, right? Like mm-hmm. it was like the local channel, right? Yeah. Well, guess who watches that? CEO Everlast, you know? Wow. And was like, yo, I need to talk to that guy. And so then he sent one of his sales guys out to come find us in Newark. I didn't believe it because I had just quit my job, and then I walk in the gym and this dude saying he's from Everlast. I'm like, man, get out of here, whatever, bro. And I was like, I need to see some ID. And when he showed me his card, I was like, bro, I need a hug, you know? And then that came about. And then I was like, they were like, yeah, they're going to give you a bunch of free equipment and outfit your gym. And I was like, oh, man, this is amazing. I was like, well, I want to thank them in person. Is there any time I can come to the office? That week, he's like, yo, can you do Friday? So he set up the meeting between me and the CEO and the head of marketing, and they sat down with me, and they were like, hey, we just want to hear about you. Tell us the vision. And so I told them the vision of Ironbound, about how we create this brand that funds free boxing programs in low-income communities all across the country. And then we also create jobs through corporate wellness, where we teach boxing to companies all over that have an employee wellness program. And they were like, oh, that sounds good to us. We want to support it. And I was like, wait, what? And the crazy part about this whole thing was I got a lot of support for building the brand. I've gotten a lot of, like, media and branding traction. But, like, back then, I think that was, like, a year and a half ago, maybe. I didn't even have, like, a client yet, you know. So, granted, I had made traction with the nonprofit, but I hadn't made traction on the for-profit yet. And so, like, I sold the vision. I got buy-in, and it was just, like, okay, wow. This pressure of, like, man, I got to go deliver on this thing, you know. And I tease the CEO now because I'm, like, and I kind of tease a lot of early people. It's like when I kind of came with this idea for this venture, I'm like, y'all let me come up with this idea. Not one of y'all told me how hard it was really going to be, you know? And everybody's like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But it's like, man, this stuff is hard. Like, to all y'all out there in the hustle that are getting after it, man, I feel you. I feel your pain. It's real.
But, I mean, do you think probably, like, I'm thinking about it from their perspective. There's this guy that's coming from the Naval Academy, right. been overseas and everything. But like, oh, he got it.
No, I think you're right. I think that goes back to that self-awareness thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the thing when you come from an institution like the Naval Academy, when you're a Marine infantry officer, the expectations on you are just so much higher.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Like, people aren't expecting you to punt it, you know? They're like, oh, this sounds hard, but if anybody was going to do it, probably be a 3-time national champ from Naval Academy, you know? And so, yeah, I think it goes into that self-awareness. But, you know, this last year, the battle has been, like, as comfortable as I was, like, in the boxing space, you know, I'm very confident in my ability to teach boxing, especially grassroots. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I specialize in. But business is, like, a whole nother battlefield. And so this last year has just been building my confidence and growing into the businessman, Mike Stedman, as opposed to just the boxing coach.
Yeah. I mean, it worked out. I mean, if that's what these people were thinking, like, oh, he's got it because he's been through X, Y, and Z,
right.
It's worked out. So obviously they did see something. They were right.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think it's just the desire to succeed, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if you look at it, like, even us, dude, at the end of the day, we have a boxing gym in Newark, New Jersey, which is one of the most dangerous cities in the country, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't have the best reputation, but people know we have a gym there. You know what I'm saying? And built from the ground up. So that's pretty impressive to have one of those things.
Yeah, and it's not just you running the gym as well.
No, I have a partner named Keith Colon. His son, they're actually out at USA Nationals right now.
In Louisiana, right?
Yeah, in Louisiana, Lake Charles, you know, making this final run for the Olympic 2020 Olympics. Mm-hmm. But, man, Keith is great, and, you know, he's from Newark, grew up in Newark, served some time in prison, like a lot of people in boxing. But he really supports kids. He's really bought into the program and the gym, and I think we just feed off each other. You know, so even like the night he's actually the head coach of the gym. You know, I had to step away because I couldn't fundraise and support the program and do all the stuff that needs to get done and coach 6 days a week like I did the first 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, it was taking its toll on me, and it was basically hurting us as a brand and organization. And so I decided to only coach on weekends and spend the rest of that time, you know, working on Ironbound, working on the other stuff, building out our board strategy and all that kind of stuff. And so. But, Keith's an integral part, man. He's a great coach. He really cares about the kids, specializes in grassroots boxing again. And he runs the gym day to day, just getting them, you know, ready for competitions and whatnot. And then I get to show up at the fights and support, you know, making sure the kids got gear, making sure they got transportation to and from, making sure we get to eat, you know what I'm saying, all the administrative stuff.
Yeah.
And it's cool because it really does keep me grounded. I got to enjoy this now before we – get any bigger too.
Yeah. How many kids do you have right now?
On the competition side of the house, I think we've got like 10.
Okay.
But probably about 35, 40 kids total. Okay. But it's also the gym, and this is the thing that's cool about the gym, is it's really a community gym too. So you have a lot of kids that will be in there, and they'll come in with their parents, just kind of hit the bag. But yeah, it kind of just, I just get to sit back and watch it unfold. I get to watch them use the space. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is spaces for y'all. You know, we're just the guys that set conditions for y'all to have it.
Do you have any of the adults participate as well? They whether they're like coach parents or whether they're like kind of working out with the kids?
Yeah, a lot of the parents, because they're in there so much, then they start to kind of pick up the pads and help each other out. Yeah. Because, you know, with Keith being the only with the coach, we're volunteers right now, mm-hmm. you know. And so everybody's kind of got to do their part. And so everybody helping each other out and everything. So it's good.
Mm-hmm. Now, and you were talking about the for-profit side,
right?
And you're trying to also get the kids that are training with you now to then be able to transition to that. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's the goal. So what we do is we supply companies with on-site boxing instructors. Mm-hmm. So if there's a company in the New York City metro area that employee wellness is big now, right? Our generation, the millennial generation, they want more than a paycheck now. You get what I'm saying? Like, in the age of tech, where people are getting free food and sleep pods and everything else, right? Like,
if you want to
attract talent, you got to have something that keeps talent and nourishes that talent.
Yeah.
And one of the things that people realize is that, like, yo, health and wellness is a big part of that. Like, nobody wants to be, you know, depressed and fat and out of shape and mm-hmm. unhappy all the time. And so a lot of companies are starting to offer employee wellness programs to companies. So, like, you can come in, you can participate in a yoga class, you can participate in a fitness class, group fitness. And so, you know, they're starting to do yoga, they got meditation, they got all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, what's a great way to increase employee wellness? Boxing. Boxing's badass, be quite frank. Mm-hmm. It sells itself. And so if there's a company out there that wants boxing, I was like, yo, we'll supply it. And then in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, this would be also a great way to connect our kids as they get older, get them some part-time employment, you know, teaching some of these classes and working with these clients. Plus, it exposes them to a different atmosphere they're used to in Newark. And so that's when I came up with the idea. And so over the last year and some change, it's pretty much just been pounding pavement, building out client portfolio, learning what I don't, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So even what it takes to actually teach these classes or what it's like being inside these spaces and whatnot. So it's been good. I mean, the last year we teach classes. We built a client portfolio to include WeWork, Spotify, NextJump. This last month I signed a new client called Topology in Newark. Love us. And so really just need to double down, triple down, and make this thing push through gravity and achieve liftoff.
And have the kids started going with you on these visits?
No, not yet. Not yet. So they're coming up. You know, when I started, a lot of our kids were younger. They're like 14. So now they're starting to get in that, you know, 17, whatever. Yeah. But No, I haven't pushed it on them as much yet because I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah, yeah. And so what's the plan? Or is that too soon to say you don't want to?
No. That's just the plan. Yeah. The plan is that I get away from teaching so many classes and I just become the matchmaker. Mm-hmm. You know, so that I can say like, hey, I got a client. Boom, I got the perfect trainer for you. It's Keith Cologne. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Olympic, 2020 Olympic, college student, whatever. He's going to run your boxing classes on Tuesday mornings or something. Yeah. And then you just plug him in. And you pay him a premium, too.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the vision, to be able to have those opportunities. And then the other piece I'm working on now is I'm about to blow up the Ironbound Boxing brand, which is like we just launched our e-commerce site.
Yeah. So.
And so now people can go on to ironboundacademy.com and purchase gear. But one of the things I'm thinking is like, okay, I got this brand. It's dope. But like how as a like a feel-good brand doesn't create repeatable clients. You know, it's like, oh, you buy one shirt, but then are they going to buy it again? So I got to figure out a strategy of like what makes people come back over and over again to purchase our gear and wanting to purchase it for other people. And so that's kind of the ecosystem, right? You got wellness going on. You've got the e-commerce going on, and everything to support this mission of free boxing. So, you know, a proceeds of all our for-profit stuff, you know, will support our nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I know I've talked with you about this a bit, but I want to talk about it on air. How often do you get approached by other people that are like, I want to try to replicate this model in X city or X town?
I'll get hit up by people all the time. I'll be like, I love what you're doing. I want to do something similar. It might not necessarily be related to boxing, but early on, I feel like, I mean, I got a couple LinkedIn messages and stuff too from people. But it's for me, it's like I just got to know how serious people are.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just trying to get Lance. Lance, we always give him one question. He doesn't really have any fighting or combat sports experience, but I always like to get the input or the voice of one person that's never trained before. So what you got for us, Lance?
Well, I'm a futurist. No, I'm not. No, I do watch a lot of anime stuff, and recently
I used to watch anime.
Oh, yeah?
Trigon. I used to be part of anime club in high school.
Trigon?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, back in the day. Yo. Sit in there and watch anime.
I never met anybody who was into Trigon besides me.
Trigon is good.
I used to go to the video stores, and I would get the anime. What was the guy, Akira?
Akira,
and the guy that wrote those movies, The Wolf Brigade. Remember the high quality anime?
Yeah,
was like my thing to do on like Friday nights. I would go.
They just remade the Wolf Brigade as a live action.
Yeah,
it's just as messed up as the. But they've always been a boxing anime, but recently they've kind of stepped it up a little bit more, where it's a little bit more futuristic kind of. Mm-hmm. Where there's one called Megalobox, and I think there's one on Netflix called Livius. But these like people who are somewhat augmented, where it's boxing, but like
I think they're plugging in,
right? But no, actually not really. It's like they have like exoskeletons around their arms.
It's like Gundam boxing.
Like down to the person. Except Livius is a little bit more like they're replacing their arms, which is wild. But Megalobox is more like, oh, I'm just gonna augment my strength with, you know, that sort of thing. Do you think which is that one, I feel, is a bit more realistic, whereas we've seen exoskeleton from the military and stuff like that to help them augment their strength to carry loads and stuff like that. Do you think that boxing would ever get to that type of future?
You never know. Humans are, they're doing all kind of jacked up stuff.
Yeah.
You know, now, you never know. I wouldn't put it past us, you know?
Yeah. Like, if they were to even get to there, what do you think the landscape would look like with that sort of thing? Because then now it's like, it's equipment.
I mean, it's already kind of started, though. I mean, Everlast just ran a thing on their IG of a boxer who was amputated, you know?
Oh, wow.
So he's got these, at the end of the day, there's certain things that, like, just like we think black people and people of color deserve nice things,
right?
Just because people are born or have deficiencies or stuff, they're still going to want to participate in stuff, and they want to have stuff for them. So it might look something along those lines of like, you know, athletes that have gone through some kind of traumatic injury or something are able to, you know, compete and do sports thanks to the exoskeleton and stuff or something.
Oh, okay.
That is me, who's never thought about this stuff. This is just my, you know.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember, one day our guest no-showed us, and me and Lance were talking for a while about who's the sprinter that got female sprinter?
Oh, yeah.
Caster Semenya, yeah. And that was one thing we were talking about. It's just like she was born a particular way. Should she be able to compete, you know, and would that fly in combat sports? Because it's different when you're running because you're not hurting anyone. Mm-hmm. But when you have the ability to inflict life-altering damage on someone's body, what are the ramifications? Yeah. What are the implications of that? So
yeah, I just saw something on that too. It was more talking about the transgender athletes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was one of the recommendations they were saying is that, like, look, let them compete, but maybe they have their own
lane.
Yeah, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. that way that it's equal instead of like, because right now I think some people feel like it's dangerous. You know, it's mm-hmm. not like it's not fair. You know,
I mean, they have bare knuckle boxing.
Yeah,
that's starting to become a thing now.
Are you watching? Like,
a little bit. The professional bare knuckle boxing is really, it's just bare knuckle boxing for legacy purposes, right?
Yeah.
They're not
really looking to hold it. Yeah,
but there still are bare knuckle leagues in like Europe and everything where they go out. But like, no, I mean, you gotta understand, people are all over the world are searching for meaning in their lives. It's quite frank, right? Like, everybody's got bills and heartache and everything like that, but at the end of the day, recreation, whether it's bare knuckle boxing or something, it gives people a sense of purpose. You get what I'm saying? It's like, man, I could be working at McDonald's, but I'm the bare knuckle boxing champ. You know, like they really love that stuff. And so, you know, people are always going to try to find meaning through activities. And I think boxing is just the way we choose to do it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you watch boxing now, like pro boxing or anything?
I watched the highlights on DAZN for about 3 minutes, 4 minutes the next day after a big fight. I mean, I still watch. If there's a fight worth watching, I will do my best to see it, but it ain't the end of the world. But I definitely take more precedence over, like, my kids competing, right? Like, I try as hard as I can to not miss those, you know,
of course,
support. But for the pro boxing stuff, it's, like, not as much, honestly.
So you didn't watch the fight last night?
No, I saw the highlight. I mean, it's crazy because they posted the highlights. DAZN posted the highlights, like, an hour after it was done.
That was the, for those of you listening, this is a Ruiz and Joshua rematch.
Yeah, Zone. Sorry, I keep calling it DAZN. It's Zone.
I did it for a long time, too. And I don't know how anyone thought that DAZN should be pronounced Zone.
Yeah, so I think you kind of think about it, right? Like, a lot of pro boxing has to sell the story, right? They sell, like, what's going on in the fighter's personal life and all that kind of stuff.
Selling
the drama to create that sense of empathy and that attachment to the athlete so that you want to tune in and see them. You get what I'm saying? But now it's like, I got so many of my own fighters, my kids, that I get to, again, I don't have to, you don't have to shoot a 24/7 documentary, you know, to show why this competition is important to this kid. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, he's one of my kids. So, like, I know it's important to him.
Yeah.
I know how hard he trains in the gym. And so I want to go out and support him. I can't necessarily feel the same way about a lot of the pro boxing I see.
Just because you don't have that personal connection.
Yeah, no.
That's crazy. Do you watch any amateur boxing even? Like, you watch, Golden Gloves, Olympics?
I watch, if it's a kid I'm supporting, right, then I watch it, right? Shakur is, like, from Newark, right? So he's a big name there. So I'll try to tune in to see some of his stuff. But not really, man. Honestly, for me, like, I'm a gym guy, right? Like, I like the gym stuff. I like the gym sparring. You know what I'm saying? I watch gym sparring. Like, that's my thing.
Yeah.
But, like, the pro and entertainment stuff, like, that's cool for me, but it's, like, the core of what I like about boxing is the training piece.
Yeah.
The feeling you get from training and performing, you know what I mean? It's like, it's probably like 90% gym stuff for me is what I like, and then like the other 10% when it makes sense.
Yeah, so you're probably somebody that likes like the club shows more than like the bigger, like.
Not even the club shows, man. I'm talking about just like traveling to go spar.
Oh,
you know
what
I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm talking about like the stuff before the club show. That's the stuff I like.
I like the club shows because it's like a hang. It's like I don't want to go to the garden shows, like the Hulu Theater and all that stuff, where it's like a big like song and dance. I want to go where it's like all the coaches are just hanging out, dapping each other up, talking about whatever, you know, and there's fights.
Yeah, no. Amateur shows, like I said, amateur shows are good. But for me, again, it's like even when I look at myself as like a fighter, dude, it was the gym. It was, you know what I'm saying? It's the just the being in the gym culture. It's the gym culture, you know?
Yeah.
I like watching my guys spar, you know, especially when it's good competitive sparring. That's what I get hype about. When I can break in, you know, can teach and stop it. Like, that's what I like more.
Yeah, Dope, man. We have extra time, but I mean, I think we've said everything that we need to say. I would hate to drag it on without nothing to say. So before we go, why don't you tell everybody where they could find out more about Ironbound Boxing, where they could donate if they're interested in that, or where they could follow you on social media.
Yeah, if there's anybody out there that understands the benefits of boxing and what it means to low-income communities, you know how hard it is for these kids to train, right? Like, a lot of them don't have the funds to pay for a monthly gym membership. You know, their parents are living in the projects, or, you know, their parents are, they're not the only sibling. You get what I'm saying? And so it's like, it's just not a priority. So what we're able to do is we're able to give kids in low-income communities access to free boxing training. You know, they don't have to pay anything. All they got to do is show up. We take care of anything else. That story resonates with you. You know, I encourage you to visit our website, ironboundboxing.org, and donate. A $5, $10, $20 monthly recurring donation allows us to train kids completely for free and outfit them with the gear that they need. And then you can also go always support us by purchasing our apparel, ironboundacademy.com. Follow us on Instagram at ironboundboxing, and can follow my personal page at Iron Mike Stedman.
Thanks a lot, man. Thank you for coming out on a Sunday all the way from Jersey on a cold-ass day.
Yeah, now we're going to go talk about your gym, right? We're about to go do some strategy stuff.
I hope so, man. I hope that you're not the only gym in the area, you and Cops and Kids, man.
No.
But hopefully we'll get something uptown very, very soon, but that's in the works.
All right.
We've been dropping hints about that in like every episode.
Yeah, so, let's get it done, man. Be happy to support you when you get off the ground.
Yeah, thank you again for coming out. Thank you, Lance, for producing. And thank you, everyone out there listening. This has been another episode of Super Upper Punch. We'll talk to you next time. Peace.
Peace.
This has been a Gifted Sounds podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review. For more podcasts, please visit giftedsounds.com.